and Father.
Yes.
This August, again, I'm going to remind you to stay a little bit away from your phone, if you would.
Is that better?
Yes. Oh, infinitely, right. Yes, sir.
I'll do that religiously, I hope.
Religiously. Father, this October, I'm going on a trip which is going to take me to Rome. I've never been to Rome, I've never been to the Vatican, and I'm going to go to the Vatican. What should I see?
Well, that provokes an awful lot of thoughts in my mind, Art. Entre nous, between you and me, let me provide you with one or two names to go and see when you do go there.
Oh.
And if you're to give me your dates, but I will talk with you separately about all that.
All right.
Apart from that completely, there is so much to be seen there that my one main advice to you is to make a choice beforehand, because you can't stay there forever.
As a matter of fact, I'll only be in Rome for 2 days.
Well, then in 2 days, there are certain things you can see and are worth seeing, and that repay the time put into it. You can see St. Peter's, and you can see the Vatican museums, the main museums, in 1 day, less than 1 day, in one good outing, organized by some agency. And there are many good ones in Rome, and there are many good ones here. They're organized in Rome for you.
Now, if I were to use your name, that would not get me into the secret archives, would it?
Well, if you use it with a certain men, whose names I'll give you, yes.
Oh, my.
Good. Get you a visit there. It's a fantastic thing. Do you know there are 7 miles beneath the surface of Rome?
7 miles?
Secret archives. And you enter this thing, and when you enter it, the light goes on. And as you move through it down along the passageways, the light behind you goes off and the light ahead of you goes on.
Oh,
it's a fantastic thing. It is a fantastic affair.
What I would give to be able to see that.
You can. You can see it, all right. But if you can, in a short visit, though, you just look at it and you pass on because you haven't got the time.
Right.
But you can see it. And then there are various other parts of Rome which should be seen. But the main one would be the Peter's Basilica and some of the main Vatican museums, because they're magnificent. You've never seen such magnificence and such art.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, it's a marvelous thing. It's simply marvelous. And Rome has some aura which exists no place else. And they say, non si parte di Roma. Nobody ever leaves Rome once you've been there. And it's true. Before you go, I must know your dates, and before you go to Rome.
Indeed, I will let you know. I'll be in Rome actually. I believe October 2nd.
October 2.
Well, no, that's wrong. Now let me get back to you on that.
Yeah,
actually, it's at the end.
We can talk separately, but we have all the time.
All right. Here's the facts I want to read you. We're going to get down to some hard stuff here.
Yes.
Dear Art, I'm sure the good father would agree that belief in God must come from one's own faith.
Yes.
Then it would. Would it not be true that faith is necessary for one to believe that demons also exist? I personally believe that his God, meaning yours, Father,
yes,
or any God, does not exist. To me, it's all a fairy tale. So, would my non-belief of the angel and demon, God and devil, heaven and hell dogma, mean that I am one whose body cannot be possessed? And if so, what does that say about that particular theology?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess, number one, would somebody of his sort be somebody whose body could not be possessed?
No. His body can be possessed. His belief or disbelief is no guarantee his body won't be possessed or can't be possessed. But that doesn't mean it will be either. It's the profile. We try to create the profile of the possessable person, Art. We've tried it since 1970, and there is no profile.
There is no profile.
No, it's a random thing happening.
Rich, but poor, good, evil.
Male, female, homosexual, heterosexual, educated, uneducated. It doesn't make any difference. That's not the norm, apparently. We don't know what the norm is. It looks to us like completely random choice. Because, Art, between you and me and the Holy Spirit, I know very naughty people. I really do in New York. I mean, people who have morals that I can't share. I know mafia people. I've come across my share of these people in many walks of life, but they're not possessed. They're just very naughty.
Actually, it's a very good question. There are, as you point out, many naughty people. It's a very kind word.
Yeah.
How do you delineate between the very naughty and the possessed?
Well, the very naughty are usually terribly honest about their naughtiness. A high-class call girl, who is simply a prostitute, will tell you honestly, when she lets her hair down, that she is that. A mafia soldier who is on vacation over here from the West Coast because he's done something over there and he's in retirement for the moment over here. I'm citing people I know. They'll explain exactly what happened. In fact, one of my first contacts as a priest in New York was with a mafia soldier who had been shot up and needed absolution and anointing. They were afraid he was going to die. But that's one kind. The other kind, the possessed kind, is something very different. And then there's the various stages of possession. But it's a very different thing. The phenomena is different. The behavior is different. The things surrounding them are different. The atmosphere, the smell, the behavior, the look, the language.
Father, does possession come upon a person slowly, in stages, or does it come all at once?
Slowly and in stages. It's like any addiction. It's like any addiction. It becomes, for instance, we're dealing now with a new generation art, really. They're always 20-somethings or 30-somethings. Very few 40s, but they're in the 20s and 30s, and the situation is generally the same as the young man who came to me about 15 years ago and said, "Look, Father, I wanted such and such and such and such and such and such. And I made a pact with the devil. I said to him, if you really are Satan, and if you have power, give me this." And he said, "I got it." And now he said, "He won't let me go." And he did it slowly. And then I inquired into how it happened. And his mind got used to the idea of asking for help and for really a leg up. And he got the leg up. In various places, and succeeded tremendously in his profession, and then he found that his mind was locked and his will was locked, and he wasn't free. He wasn't free to love, and he wasn't free to choose, and finally, he wasn't free to die.
Father, there are many people who have, at one time or another, let it cross their mind.
Yes.
Let me have this. Let me succeed in this. Let me do this.
Yes.
And I'll sell my soul, whatever.
Yes.
Now, how does one know whether one actually has made a pact with the devil or one has just had a fleeting, horrid little thought that went away?
No, it's a very good question. There's this art, and those to whom it has happened will know exactly what I'm talking about. There is this lock they find on their will, and there's the control of their mind, which they lose. It's not that they go all hairy or they lose it, as we say, but it is that they find that their mind is restricted in certain ways, and their will, they cannot do certain things. They cannot exercise compassion. They cannot. They can't desire certain things. They can't really desire their wife or their husband, if it's a woman that's in question. It's the peculiar lock on the will, and that's generally what sends them, the ones that are saved, sends them running for a priest or an exorcist. What happens in some cases is that they go further into it and they're completely programmed and controlled.
Well,
and then you have perfect possession, out of which I have never seen any person emerge.
Never?
Never. I haven't seen them. Now, I'm only 76.
So it is not, sir, the classic possession that we all recall from The Exorcist, not that, but a more perfect
it's a perfect possession. You see, the classical form is the person who makes themselves very obnoxious in their behavior. And they're really like the child. When a child is hungry, an infant who can't talk, they bang their heads on the ground and they throw themselves around. They protest. And they're saying, I'm hungry, or I'm dirty, or I'm thirsty. That's one form. And that something can be done about that. But when they're perfectly possessed, they don't ask for any help. And they eschew any help. And
How many people, Father, do you think are in that condition? Let's just talk about America right now. Forget the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. On a percentile basis, you mean?
Sure.
A minimal crowd. A minimal set of people. By minimal, what do I mean? Well, we are 260 million, isn't it, or something like that?
Yes.
I'm trying to make a proportion between the number I've known and the general population. I suppose about 10 million.
10 million.
If I am, in my mind, I'm calculating the proportion of people I've been with in this whole field.
Well, here's a tough question for you.
Uh-huh.
Would we generally, if we could see these 10 million people,
yes,
would we find that they are powerful, the successful, the...
Yes, you would. None of them are obscure. None of them are failures. None of them are without respect and means. A lot of them are in high places. And as Charles II said about his ministers, the higher they go, the higher they climb, the blacker their bottoms get.
But that's the very worst possible scenario for the world. These are the people who are shaping policy?
Well, that is the difficulty, that we do find those in charge of things. And when you do, I've seen the following take place in a certain bureaucracy, which I won't name, but a very well-known bureaucracy,
mm-hmm,
of a worldwide nature, not merely American. People by men and women of ordinary means, some of them Hindus, some of them Christians, some of them Jews, some of them nothing at all, but with a natural, what I know, for want of a better phrase, civic virtue, isolating somebody who's obviously perfectly possessed and getting rid of them. Because somehow or other they just, everybody agreed, there was a consensus that this person was in alliance with something that militated against our best instincts as human beings. I've seen that happen. And not for any religious motive either. Consciously religious motive.
Uh-huh.
Do you understand what I'm saying? That they felt uncomfortable in the presence of this person. And
yes,
also saw that the direction of their actions and decisions, which they had power to take within the bureaucracy, was evil, humanly. I've seen that happen. But yes, there are people in very high places, as well as in normally high places, who are perfectly possessed. There's no doubt about that.
And they will never be saved.
As far as my experience in life goes, Art, I don't doubt God's grace or God's greatness and God's power, but neither do I doubt or belittle the power of Lucifer, because he is the prince. Satan is something else. As you know, it's not the same being. Satan and Lucifer are different, one from the other. But I don't belittle the power of Lucifer. He is the prince of this world, as Christ called him. And he has his kingdom. And at the present moment, he reigns supreme in the middle plateau.
Well, if Lucifer,
yes,
has all of these perfectly possessed people,
yes,
that are in effect in league with, have made a deal with him,
right,
then why does Lucifer from time to time do this horrible thing and possess the otherwise totally innocent who have not asked for in any way any sort of deal with him?
Well, nobody is possessed against their will. You always say yes. even the semi-possessed, even the obsessed, which is the stage prior to possession, they say yes. You are never possessed against your will. You're never obsessed against your will.
Huh.
You open a door. And you say, well, who are you? Or put a foot in and let me look at it. Or it's partial invitation.
Mm-hmm.
And but what must be stressed is that this doesn't happen to everybody who's just barely naughty. Do you understand? I use the word naughty to cover all sorts of human malefactions.
I'm sure.
But it doesn't follow. It's a random thing as far as we're concerned. But there's one more thing which we must stress. And it's not a cause for pride on our part, but it's this, that Lucifer, it can be intensely stupid, as Satan can also, as all demons can be. They're extremely limited in their knowledge. They don't know everything. They're not all powerful. In fact, they have merely been conceded certain powers by God. And that is one of the mysteries of this creation, why evil spirits have been given power. But that they have, and that they reign supreme on the middle plateau, there's no doubt about that.
Father, I recently saw a movie called The Craft. I don't know whether you've ever seen it.
I've heard about it.
It is about four young women who decide they will call upon dark spirits to do their bidding.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite well done, calling on dark spirits from north, south, east, west.
Yes.
It's a horrifying movie. And to back it up, I've interviewed a number of people who suggest that young teenage girls, particularly young teenage girls, are powerful. That they frequently have things occur around them where poltergeist problems have occurred.
That's right.
They've occurred around young teenage girls. Now you have these four girls actively seeking out the dark forces to do their bidding.
Yes.
Is such a thing possible?
Oh, yes, and is an everyday occurrence in our experience. Now, it's not that everybody does it, or a lot of people do it, but as far as happening art, it's an everyday occurrence.
All right, Father, I want to talk more about this. We're at the bottom of the hour. Relax, we'll be right back to you. This will put a shiver down your spine, believe me. I'm Art Bell from the high desert where there's cactus. This is CBC. Back now to Father Malachi Martin. By the way, Father, WABC Radio in New York, the big one there in New York, is having discussions with us presently about possibly getting on the air there.
Yeah.
The Big Apple. And for two Saturdays recently, we sent them programs that we had done in the past, which they ran from, I think, midnight to 5 o'clock in the morning. And one of those programs was one of the ones I had done with you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So you were heard widely there in your own city.
Thank you very, very much, Art.
At any rate, I considered it one of the best, and so we sent it along and they ran it. I thought you'd want to know.
I certainly do, and thank you so much. That's excellent.
All right. Father, is magic real?
The best answer, the most accurate answer, is yes, there is a magic. There is a magical system which is real, yes.
All right, as an example, again, I refer to the movie The Craft.
Yes.
In that movie, it showed there was a dispute between a couple of the young ladies. One grabbed a hank of hair from the other. And they began doing these dark spells.
Right, yes.
And in the movie, this girl who had this magical spell cast against her began to lose all her hair, began falling out.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of magic, Father, real, tangible things that can be done to other people.
Yes, that can be, under certain conditions, can be real and effective and horrible. No doubt about it. It can be.
So it can be, in effect, foisted off from one person to another.
That's
using dark forces.
Yes, under certain conditions. under certain conditions. And one would want to outline those, but in general it is that both the hexer, the speller, the person doing it to somebody else, must have an arrangement, be in league with,
yes,
have a pact with,
yes,
demonic forces, and the person affected must lack protection, because we all need protection.
And what protection is there?
To put it in human language, on this level of understanding art, it is the arrangement whereby I, at least in general, in my life trend and in the way I behave, I follow the dictates of what I call my conscience, which is really my angel, because we're all assigned an angel to protect us. Because there is always danger of being attacked by demonic forces, either directly or indirectly. And we have an angel, a guardian angel, we call it, or him, or her. There's no sex involved, but we use him or her or it. We always have an angel who can protect us if we forsake that angel. And the general trend of our life is in the very opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
Then we are liable. There's no doubt about that. And I can't tell you, I have one whole filing cabinet full of letters from people who are victims of that.
This is the end of side one. Please leave the cassette exactly where it is, flip it over, and begin again.
You are listening to the best of Art Bell.
From the Kingdom of Nye, Coast to Coast AM continues with Art Bell.
You are now 76.
That's right.
76 years old.
Actually, Art, truthfully, I'll be 76 on July 23.
On the 23rd?
Yes.
Oh, my. When I talked to your secretary,
yes,
the other day, she, yes, said you were, at the time we talked, at an exorcism.
That's right.
You're still doing exorcisms.
Oh, yes. It's, at the present moment, it's usually directive. That is, that I'm in charge of an exorcism. I'm not usually doing it myself. I don't need to, because there are two or three going on at the same time. And I decide what must be done, interview the people, and assign it, and then observe, and at times step in to correct something. It goes on continuously, because they since I started this work in the United States, that's about since 1970, and it's now 1997-98, coming into it.
Yes.
The incidence of possession, and therefore of exorcism, has increased between 750 to 800%.
Wow.
An enormous. And this is only in the northeast corner, Art. In the northeast corner. The increases, and then the amount of covens that have sprung up, genuine covens.
Yes.
Is enormous.
When you say coven, would that be, for example, Wicca?
Yes, there are Wicca covens. And these are, a coven is a general term for a group of people who are linked together by one main point, adoration and service of Lucifer.
Huh. And you know, many people involved, Father, in Wicca will tell me constantly that they are not of the dark side.
Oh, yeah, there's a white Wicca, as they call it, and it's really nature worship and that sort of business. You know, it's innocent in that sense. There's it's a reversal to the gods of nature, and the gods of nature as such. And that, of course, has its own liabilities as regards belief in God itself. in God himself. But the, as for the white Wiccans, I know the chief Wiccan in Long Island. She's a very respectable lady, and she holds classes teaching people how to be how to enter Wicca, white Wicca, and they will have nothing to do with any other form of it at all. But that's not what we're talking about, really. It's a nature worship, and a lot of people are in this, and many who are in it because of disillusionment with religion, Judaism, Christianity, Catholicism,
yes.
Presbyterianism, you know what I mean? They've had it up to there, as we say, with a form of religion, therefore they find this consoling. And they love animals, and that's the reason they never have sacrifices of little animals, dogs or cats or birds or horses or anything like that. It's a nature worship, and you see, if we use the word paganism, it has connotations for the ear that are sort of bad. You know, these are what the ancient Romans and ancient Greeks and all those people practiced.
Is it as dangerous for one's soul as even the darker forms of Wicca?
No, it is not. And I've met many Wicca people who are led out of it by sheer devotion to nature and by finding out that the beauty and the truth around them must mirror some greater beauty, greater truth, more permanent beauty and truth elsewhere. And that's God. But it all depends. It's very hard to give an accurate answer to your question, because it all depends on what graces have been offered you. Has God entered your life, and have you refused him? Do you understand me? Have you rejected an invitation from God?
Father, I don't feel I've ever had one. I don't doubt a creator.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have no tangible proof, and I am the kind of person
mm-hmm.
who has a very difficult time believing in that which I cannot prove, and I'm constantly striving to prove and to learn through every avenue I can manage, some mm-hmm. of them probably very less worthy than you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm constantly searching and looking, and yet I've been unable to make that leap of faith. And I don't know that I've ever received a specific invitation. How does one know?
Well, I'll tell you. Somebody has said, and it's a way of entry into this, somebody has said that if I say to you, and I'm not me and you're not Art Bell, so we're two mythical people, but if I say to you, look, I want to love you, that's the beginning of love. It's the beginning of love. If I say, I'd love to believe in you,
uh-huh.
it's the beginning of belief. In fact, there's no Jewish theologian or Christian theologian who would dispute the fact that if you say that, it means that it's a grace in itself.
Just to say the words.
Because otherwise you'd be feckless. You wouldn't bother. You wouldn't bother your head. You regard it all as piffle, as nonsense, as garbage. And there's this about it too, Art. There's this about it also. That you can be drawn along for decades by the wish that one could get grace and one doesn't, apparently, consciously, mentally, rationally, and all the while you're getting grace, because grace is something of which you're not conscious.
Does it come upon you as a slow stage possession would?
That's right, it does. And it comes upon you in this, that when you find that, for instance, the fire is in you, once upon a time tended you to less good actions, tended you to less pure motives, that limited your original fits of anger, of lust, of gourmandise, of jealousy. You find
yes.
those fires dying down, and a certain pacific sense entering your inner being, then there's something taking place.
But is that not a natural progression of age?
No.
No?
Pastoral experience teaches me, and I'm long enough at it, that on the contrary, in my native language, Gaelic, Dolanisha Dolanolkas is a famous phrase, getting older and deeper into sin. The older you get, the worse you get. Pastorally, it's not the way it is, Art. People do not mellow and mature and get gentle and calm and compassionate. On the contrary, they don't, except some people do.
Well, then maybe there is some hope for me, because surely those things are occurring to me. Those things you described,
yes,
as I grow older, are occurring to me.
I know they are. And what God must do in your case, and my case, and every case when he wants them, he must purify the rust in you. Whatever erroneous thoughts you ever had, whatever excesses we committed when we were younger, and more stupid than we are at the present moment.
Oh, believe me, there were many for me.
Oh, well, we all have them. There's no human being who, if they're honest, doesn't say the same thing. But the difference between the men and the boys is that there's that, you know, somebody has said, and it's true, between the ages of 35 to 55 or 65, it's a corridor of youth.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that, and towards the end of it, we begin suddenly to realize certain lessons we have learned, if the grace of God is working on us. And you see, God has no form. We say he because that's the way the Bible speaks, and that's where we talk in human language. And we have no neutral words in our English language anyway to express his existence. But he draws us along gently, I think, until finally he can perfect it before we die. So that when we die, we go to him and not elsewhere.
Good. Here's a fax in. I have suspected, Father Martin, that I may be possessed, very subtly, for a long time now. How it started is a long story, but after listening to you, my suspicion is now much stronger. Please tell me if there is anything to do about this, or what it means for my soul in the long term. I'm really scared. Please help. Unsigned, of course.
Well, now, Art, in this case, you see, we don't know what religious denomination this person is, whether they're Christian or Jewish or Hindu.
Does it matter?
Well, it does, because of the things we can appeal to for understanding. You see, look, you and I now, already from all the talking we've done together, we have a mutual understanding.
Yes.
You haven't got to explain your terms to me at all. And I know where you're going with a sentence. And you know generally where I'm going when I'm talking. But with a total stranger, you have to have some surface markings. You must know what's in their background by way of education, what religious, if any, ritual they have followed or been exposed to, and what are their thoughts, and then what has happened to them in concrete life situations with their wives or their children or their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
This particular person, what I would say to them, whether they mean something to them or not, they should start saying a simple prayer. And it is to Christ. And it is this, it's five words. Hide me in your wounds. And see the effect of that prayer on them. And that they can always write to me, if necessary.
Can you perform an exorcism on somebody who is a non-Catholic, or even somebody without apparent faith?
Sure. Sure you can, if they consent. I mean, if there's a basic consent. There's a civil as well as a religious aspect of this. There's a civil aspect. You can't do something to somebody unless you get the consent of somebody who is authority over them.
Is it possible to perform an exorcism on somebody without their consent? In other words, in worst-case scenario, could somebody literally be tied to a bed or bound in some way by,
yes,
family members and have somebody like you called in?
Yes, but you have their prior consent. At some given moment, they've said yes. There must be something like that. Otherwise, they're perfectly possessed. You're violating their civil rights. you're limiting their actions. You know what I mean?
Violating their civil rights.
Yes, because, I mean, if we suspect that John X is possessed, and we have strong reasons for thinking so, unless we have John's general consent or his particular consent, and John is over 18, he's an adult, we just can't aggress him and tie him down. Not in this day and age.
So you can only exorcise those who are less than perfectly possessed.
There is no exorcism for the perfectly possessed. None. None whatever. The perfectly possessed, you can give them a bottle of holy water and they'll drink it. They can handle a host, a consecrated host at Mass, which means nothing to them. They can look on a crucifix and say, oh, well, that's Romanesque, and it probably is 9th century. You know, it'll mean nothing to them.
You said that exorcisms, in the Northeast at the very least, are up 750 to 800%.
Right.
That's terrifying. What does it mean to you? What's coming?
Oh, it means, not to put a tooth in it, as they say in the English, it means that the prince has a wider kingdom than he had when we started off in 1970 anyway. That means he has a wider clientele. And therefore that, see, Art Bell, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a certain disturbance, perturbation of mind, disequilibrium, at least a certain uncertainty in people today that wasn't 20 years, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
I have noticed, believe me.
There is this peculiar thing, this, and it's the demon. There are demons assigned to do this to people. And you get up in the morning and you feel lousy and you're discouraged about everything. And there's no apparent reason for it. You've got money in the bank and your wife or your husband are very happy with you. The children are all healthy, more or less. And there's no war on and nobody's out to kill you.
And yet you're dissatisfied and empty.
And yet you are empty, dry, and despondent.
Yes.
And that means that you're under attack. That means that they want also to affect your spirits so that you spread dissatisfaction and you spread discontent and you spread unpeace. And that's why we all love somebody who, when they come into a room, the light comes with them. Light and peace and joy of some kind or other.
And you know that person when you're in their presence.
Exactly. They don't make you horse laugh every moment of the day.
Sure.
They do give you this. And when they leave, it goes with them, and you don't want them to go. You can see. And it's the simplest people have it.
And the opposite is true as well. When you are in the presence of a perfectly possessed person,
yeah, you know it.
You don't wonder about it. You know it.
You know, and then a lot of people see who are not acquainted with the phenomenon itself. And
Father, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Stand by. We'll be back. Father Malachi Martin is my guest.